Welcome to this episode of the Building Texas Show. I'm excited to be in Fort Worth, Texas today, talking to my friend Brandon Chikotsky, who is a professor at TCU and teaches marketing and work with private equity. It's exciting to see what Fort Worth is going through and experiencing post-COVID. And I think the academic world in Fort Worth has really brought in some professionals that will continue to develop and evolve Fort Worth in a really positive way. So Chico, thank you for joining us today.
Good to see you.
Well, Fort Worth is an interesting place, and I think you have a front row seat to the best and brightest in Texas that come through your classrooms. You've taught almost, 1,000 students over 5 years, and that's a significant impact for anyone. So thank you for building Texas in that way. But tell me, what do you see in Fort Worth?
Well, it's been a blast. I mean, the TCU Horned Frog student as a persona, their capability, we're attracting from all over the country. We went from about 4,000 or 5,000 applicants to a jump of 50,000 after we went to the national football game. And it's settled down into a more reasonable application flow. But we can take some of the best from around the country, which has been awesome. Fort Worth has had about $6.7 billion in new capital investment in fiscal year 2025. So it's the strongest year we've had in over a decade. That's driven by projects in aerospace, tech, logistics, and we've also seen advanced manufacturing. And so these companies are coming to TCU, setting up hiring booths, building relationships with profs like me, and we have some awesome programs like the TCU Sales Center. And the sales program has an average earnings upon graduation for year one target of over 100,000. And so our students are getting into competitive earnings. They're becoming angel investors by their mid and late 20s because of the commissions and the windfalls that they're a part of. And so I've been really excited to bring more private equity deal flow, really in training for TCU, but more to the accredited community in Fort Worth. And you put all that together, I'm kind of in the middle of this really fun, energetic moment in history. And I'm grateful and honored to be part of it.
Well, what an interesting perspective. Having talked and having led an angel network, having seen the impact that those angel investment rounds can do in a community, it's interesting to hear you talk about Fort Worth in that way. Fort Worth, we're seeing, look, the football team was great. It brought a lot of attention. I think shows like Landman and Yellowstone and everything, Taylor Sheridan, is bringing a lot of attention to that lifestyle and culture, good, bad, or indifferent. But TCU is a conversation. But what you just articulated is that full cycle of reinvestment and capturing bright students that can stay in Fort Worth and continue to make an economic impact long term at those kind of earnings and that type of investment. So it's really exciting to see that come full circle and to have the academic rigor behind it saying, oh, no, this is why it's working. And here's why not only Fort Worth should be doing that, but my personal opinion is smaller communities should be looking at it in a similar way. How do they make the right investments to attract the right long-term economy to their town?
It's a good way to think. We in Fort Worth, we have a functional government for one. It's not so, we haven't lost decorum entirely. We looked at Dallas and other big cities that are kind of center left, and they have a virtue signal performance art every time there's a microphone. And so what happens is they can't get procedural votes done. In Fort Worth, we're still able to operationalize our government. For example, we have mixed use urban infill like Westside Village that typically rests on unit economics like land assembled at legacy industrial pricing, but is entitled for higher value residential, office, and retail. You can't get that done in other major cities. We're a top 10 populated city now. We're number 10. The nine above us, other than maybe Jacksonville, which is kind of that 50-50 city, though that has kind of flipped to a more left representation of late, they're not going to be able to build tax increment and sales tax generation that outpaces infrastructure costs. So that means that they're going to have a constraint when it comes to development projects, and they're also going to slow down commercial rezoning. Projects that cluster near existing cultural and employment centers like the Cultural District in Fort Worth have been on fire. And we have John Goff and some excellent developers who are Texan and have chosen Fort Worth as their home, and they've done a great job. We're even seeing Ross Perot Jr., who's bringing a lot of the money that used to be residing primarily in that Dallas area, coming over to Fort Worth. They're doing great work in Alliance, and they've been doing great work since the 80s over there in North Fort Worth. And we have some incredible growth in academia in Fort Worth. So Greenfield Academic Projects, which is referenced to the development project, is really the UTA West, so that's University of Texas Arlington. So they've monetized an undeveloped land area, turning it into a long-duration education anchor that attracts that's going to attract students, staff, and follow-on private development. So think of having an entire university system in Arlington that now is going to have a comparable square footage and impact, particularly in graduate education and technology and other intellectual services that are going to be in Fort Worth proper, and really West Fort Worth that sprawls out into Weatherford and might even touch a little bit of Aledo, which is really interesting. So that takes it takes a countywide collaboration. It takes a functional government in the city. It also takes in unit economic factors that make a city investable. Another kind of showcase of how we're an investable city in the academic space is one of your recent interviews with Bobby Adier, who's a friend of mine and someone I respect very much. He's awesome. He's energetic. Has also chosen Fort Worth and Texas as his home. They have Texas A&M has built a technology center and graduate center and a law school that is going to touch the sky in southeast downtown, which is a beautiful building, and it should open at some point this year.
It's really exciting, but I appreciate what you just said. If I boil it down, you're saying take the emotion out of the political decision making and really get down to what is the long-term impact of projects coming in or projects stalling and being sitting in development planning because of that emotional layer, that the grandstanding that we do see across the state, where people are anti-growth, but they don't understand why they're anti-growth or what does that mean? Because I see it particularly in small towns where if we don't make that investment, they won't come. And I just don't think that's going to be the case in Texas. I think Austin publicly made that statement in 1970, and look at where we are. But because they made that statement, because they had that idea, infrastructure didn't follow pace of growth, and other key resources didn't follow that pace of growth. And so now they're playing catch up. And I see cities having to spend a lot more money in water infrastructure, road and bridge, because they didn't do these things 10, 20 years ago. And it's what you said just struck me really well, that you have to be looking at the long term, and you have to understand the metrics that matter to say, yes, this is the right investment, or no, it's not.
Yeah, I think it's easy to go into a virtue signal about abstract grievances by which you can claim entitlement. And you can strain the budget that way, and you can also sow division. And that's kind of the game of those who are not so technocratic. And if you challenge those ideas, they typically go into histrionics because their ideas are so bad. So the kind of hysteria is what, and all the emotionalism is how they defend themselves. And then they attack and accuse folks, and nothing really gets done that way. It's really hurtful. So, you know, the best way to address that is to, you know, love on them, pray for them, and just do good work. And for me, that is looking at a generative economy where we can work really hard to increase the GDP of our respective city. In Fort Worth, that's my mission. It's to increase the wealth basis of every family, and then also to work hard for punitive deterrence against criminal behavior and then rehabilitation, as opposed to a permissiveness of crime and also a kind of tyranny of empathy. What you see in Austin and other cities above us in population that have that kind of leftist styling, Austin has documented 6,000 homeless, but it's more like 10,000. And many of them engage in open drug use and violent crime and a perversion of citizenship. And in Fort Worth, we are a more sensible city as to how we manage that concern and that issue. I still think there's work to be done. We're going to probably need a new frame of thinking and humanitarian work and a kind of mental health services work when you suspend civil liberties for someone who's violated the law and perhaps is dealing with addiction or mental health distress. Right now, we mostly drop them off at a facility, at a hospital, and then on their own reconnaissance, they can leave and start walking around. And that neighborhood is typically a higher-end neighborhood in our medical district, and so we have some challenges in foot trafficking. Half of our violent crime is attributed to homeless and transient, which essentially is the homeless overall bucket. So you could eradicate over half of your violent crime in the areas where you have homeless in particular, and that would actually attribute to the majority of violent crime in the entire city. So those things to me just need a little bit more of a kind of social and political courage in terms of language and the other cities above us. But in Fort Worth, if you're sensible and have good decorum and you're relationally warm, I don't really think it takes that much courage, because most folks here, particularly proprietors, want their sidewalk to be walkable. And they want, when they go to church or they do anything like a restaurant and recreate around the town, they don't want to have to shield their children from someone who's deranged or perhaps intrusive in their kind of socialized space, which again would be like a public walking space, like a sidewalk or a street. I mean, Fort Worth has hit over a million residents. We have 1.008 million, and that was 2024. So we're gonna blow past that. If you look at DFW broadly, we're about 8.5 million now. And we're projected to continue, we're projected to grow. So when we issue bonds, which is a debt note to the market, a promissory that will make good on that debt, that creates a capital inflow to our city for new projects, sometimes also to operationalize the government. And we do what's called planned debt, which means that we plan for stagnation. So that's a way of kind of de-risking the bet. Now, because we're almost guaranteed to grow, we can make good on that payment. And so there's a real good confidence in the betting market to support our city. So if you bring sensible government, sensible politics, good people, really to offer a counterweight to that kind of grievance narrative and virtue signal that I talked about, all the histrionics, and then focus on generative economics and focus on first principles of society and business, like infrastructure, safety, and taxes, and then offer a really good product to the betting market to create liquidity inflow to our town, we have then this opportunity to prioritize the infrastructure and safety ahead of that growth, or at least run at pace, and kind of avoid those structural issues that you talked about with Austin.
You know, it's refreshing to hear somebody talk about the root and talk about the measures, talk about ways that we can influence these behaviors in policy and action and investment. And that's part of having a great academic culture in your city, where there's people like you that are going to serve in public office, that are going to pursue those roles and take a real clear-eyed approach to what's happening and why. And when I look at smaller towns that may not have that same rigor and that same talented pool of candidates coming in, it does become more of that emotional conversation. So where do you drive the public, the voter in Texas, to really say, hey, how do we get to the numbers? How do we get to what is my town's GDP? Where would I find? And I think that level of transparency and that level of educated response will help curtail the, we've got to do it now because of homelessness, right? Well, no, we need to do these three other things that will soften what we need to do 5 years from now to really resolve and react. And that's what I hear you saying in this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can just challenge the merit of ideas in the marketplace of ideas. Emotion and whoever's the loudest is not typically the one who's right. Yeah. And just, I think, holding that kind of sensible, high emotional intelligence and engaging in the opposition who's framing that way. But as to the constituency, whenever engaging folks or going to meet neighborhood associations, and a lot of it's just listening and knowing what they need. If they're emotional, that's okay. Because I think anyone in civic work who has a passion streak for the town or public work is going to just filter it all to a policy formation or some kind of way of effectuating an outcome. I mean, this is really about an input-output scenario. The input is data and insights and an onus for action, and the output is getting it done. And usually that means putting a tax structure together and an allocation, so whether it's a bond issuance or if it's a allocation of residing capital for the city, or if it's, say, a planning board or a cultural board or an event board, making sure that they have an output event or an output result that really is more than empty calories. I mean, I look at real data also as relevant for everybody. And so part of what I do in work with private equity, which is bringing accredited folks and family offices together to then bring subject matter experts in different market sectors, along with financial service professionals, these accredited rooms really are meant to capture more deal flow and increase deal flow in Fort Worth. That creates a flush banking community. When our banks have high assets under management, that's less to borrow from the Fed, which means they can issue cheaper loan debt. When we have cheaper credit or cheaper capital issued locally, that's really good for our economy. And so that means in that generative economics, we're getting more jobs, more businesses, and overall just a better lifestyle and livelihood. More importantly, you get the resources to control time individually as families. They can choose to go into entrepreneurship because they have the resources to move from, say, a job into proprietorship, depending. And then there's also the investment potential where you start to educate yourself about equities and other ways to trade and bet on the future. I also look at Fort Worth properly as an investable entity. And part of what I aim to do and kind of say getting rid of the grandstanding craziness of politics is more about just focusing on things that are practical. That said, I mean, I don't mind getting people fired up and reverent about history and our epic narrative of Fort Worth and why even Texas is such an important state for the union and winning the future and setting a great example when maybe on the coast people have lost their way and are a bit too dogmatic when it comes to a party politic and not so focused on the first principles of good society and monetary theory. But when it comes to, like, say, Fort Worth tourism, we had 11.5 million visitors in 2024. In 2025, when the numbers finish up, we're going to see that number blow way past that. I'm hearing numbers about 13 million or more visitors. We had more visitors come to the Stockyards in Fort Worth than those who visited the Eiffel Tower last year. Okay, that's 3.5 billion or more in economic impact in 2024, which, again, is going to be higher in the 2025 counting stats. We're looking at about $250 million in state local taxes generated from tourism alone in Fort Worth. And if you look at hospitality jobs in that sector, that's 30,000 jobs attributed to the tourist visitation. So when I think of like what we're talking about, a tax-based strategy, services offset if you think of like tourism and attracting people to your town and how when you come here you see a livable, investable, and sensible community that's relationally warm, where God is still worthy of our city, where people are decent to each other, what you have is what I call place marketing. It's where you can take like our ballrooms and our hotels and our infrastructure and it just unlocks this higher value. And we also have a really interesting front door to all that. And that deals with the Tarrant County collaboration. Many people don't realize that the DFW Airport, which is about an hour away from Fort Worth, a little bit less than an hour away, I can get there in 35 minutes when I'm really fired up. But there's about 90 million passengers that come through there every year. I want to just put that into perspective, 90 million. I mean, I think the exact number in 2024 was around 87 million. And everything's going up right now, so you can more reasonably assess that that's 90 million. So that was up about 7% from the year prior in the reporting 2023 to 2024. So we're looking at from the kind of COVID area, 2019-2020, it was 17% less at that time. So we've just been one of these winning cities, winning counties. DFW as a collaboration and partnership as a metroplex is winning. And we're number three in terms of global passenger ranking, and that means the amount of people coming through. So I can stop right there, but we've got the right signals in the labor market, economic development, and there's also this really cool thing happening with how we market the city regarding media and telling our story as Fort Worth.
Well, I want to come back to that storytelling because everything we've talked about so far whether you're in city council pitching a plan or you're in front of a family office or a VC group pitching your business, storytelling is so incredibly important. But before we make that jump, I want to close the loop on growth and abatements, because I hear a lot of cities say, we give no abatements, we don't want to attract. If you want to be here, you're going to pay your way. Versus I see other cities that say, hey, let's find a tax solution and a tax plan that is a win-win, and it does attract people in. Had a conversation with Arlington, the mayor of Arlington, recently about eSpace and how they won that opportunity. So can we talk a little bit about where is it right for a city or a tax base to make that investment abatement, or where would it, where does it not make sense from your perspective?
I really appreciate the question, because you're thinking about cities competing with each other. Yeah. And what that is, and for those who maybe aren't so familiar with abatements, is whenever you have a request for a proposal or a company that's prospecting or a developer that's prospecting opportunities in a city market, they're typically looking for a unit economic factor. That means an expense in and a return value out that gives them a winning proposition. In return, an abatement would be typically classified as a tax relief or a structured deal where on the back end or some other way the revenue for the city is accrued. So sometimes it's indirect, where if you have an increase in employment or an increase in appraisal value in a district because of new development, you can relieve tax for the proprietor or the developer. And then you can, in aggregate, capture more revenue for the city because of the amount of employment and strong families moving in, or other benefits, like just kind of conditional or environmental economic benefits. So Fort Worth's own tax abatement language is, in my opinion, pretty straightforward. So we have this thing called Chapter 312 or Chapter 312. And what it is it some people call it giving money away if you're critiquing it. But I look at it like taking incremental growth, like land projects, that otherwise would not happen, and making it happen. We have this other thing called Chapter 380, which is structured pay-as-you-go revenue. And if you take Chapter 312 and 380, what you have are these incentive policies that anchor incentives to a percentage of annual tax revenues for the city that actually receives an awesome attributable value of growth. And what that can be broken down into is essentially three sections. We have general sector projects. So these would be like a general sector project would be something that would have an architectural and environmental study of sincere need for a town. A good example is we have more walkable museums in Fort Worth than anywhere in the South. We have this incredible museum district, and in there we had a severe need for hotels. So hoteliers began to pitch really good projects, and the city offered a great incentive for that. And so they were eligible for the Chapter 380 incentive, and we have some beautiful hotels as a result that have sprung up in the last few years. We have expansion projects. So these would be like higher job creation initiatives where you can have companies that come in and say, we want to be part of a cultural district expansion. Let us be your developer. And we can give them up to 80% for certain expansion categories in terms of tax relief. Then there's mega projects. That's the third category. And these are sometimes going to be infrastructure based and have a city public-private partnership. Or sometimes they're just a pure private play, but it's a big manufacturing build or something that I call epic and involves maybe a few thousand jobs. And man, that is so exciting when we see those things come in. They're always really fun announcements. I would say Fort Worth, in the way that we do it, we have kind of this growth advantage. There are many stuck cities, and a stuck city means like they can't get any of their regulatory reviews done quickly enough. They can't get their incentive packages designed quickly enough. Fort Worth has 66,000 acres that is undeveloped. Okay, we have over 350 square miles in our city. Think about how big that is. You know, from Fort Worth to Austin, it's 300 miles. Okay, so imagine 350 square miles of a town All right. And we still call Fort Worth a town because people are so cool. Everyone here is really, really kind of notably friendly, in my opinion. I mean, there's always characters on the edges, but overall, the culture is a friendly city or a friendly town. So we are seen as one of the most, I would say, again, sensible and workable cities when you bring projects. The county also has, so along with our undeveloped area that offers a lot of opportunities, so essentially kind of about half of our city's potential commercial zone properties undeveloped, the county postures as also a growth environment. So there were no new tax abatements approved at the county level in 2024, but we're starting to see a shift in thinking in that. I would say Fort Worth is leading the way among the county broadly, but I think as a at some point we're going to see the county kind of catch on by and large. If you look at Fort Worth and you look at Dallas, you are going to see a difference, and we kind of look to each other, I think, for the right lessons. At least for Fort Worth and how we see Dallas and what to do, what not to do. But you know, there is a real difference in cities like Chicago and San Francisco and others like Detroit that have really failed. And if it's okay, I'd like to just expand on what I mean by failed or stuck cities. Okay. All right. So Chicago's budget gap in 2026 is historically higher than it's ever been. So they have a billion-dollar issue regarding structural pressure in their budget gap, meaning Fort Worth is using an incentive to expand the base, not to patch a shrinking base. So if we're bringing in a project, we're not bringing it in to fill a shortfall in our operational budget. We have an operational and solvent government, and then we're bringing in expansion projects and growth projects. We're not using it as a fail-safe, all right? So San Francisco, as in contrast, as another example, they do plan documentation with a vacancy issue, meaning they're trying to recruit companies to fill plight and a 32% office vacancy, which I think is underreported. So Fort Worth has, yes, some office vacancy issues, but we look at our bedrock downtown as an opportunity to grow, and we're not necessarily trying to solve residing problems. And we also don't have a loss of investor confidence. So we're not fighting a kind of understated issue, or I should say underreported issue, which is that ephemeral concern, this abstract concern of people just not having juice and excitement. And I've seen in the financial district in San Francisco in particular, there is that kind of loss of confidence, which is really hard to measure. But in my opinion, anecdotally, I see it. There's net losses across the board in cities like San Francisco and Chicago when it comes to their office and commercial zoning, and so they're always working on repair tools and incentives to fix that. I don't want to disparage our competing cities too much. So I'll kind of land there and just champion the capacity and speed of Fort Worth. There's a lot of incentives that you can call kind of like pay for performance with the 380 agreements that structure around actual taxes received with caps and thresholds, quality growth and transparency pressure that's rising along the state. Fort Worth, in my opinion, gets most of it right.
Well, I appreciate all of it. And it brings me to the final point for today's conversation around storytelling. And everything you just outlined can be very academic. It can be very detail-oriented and not really meeting today's high-paced family, high-paced individual that says, oh, how do I dive into unit economics in Fort Worth and understand where we're going? But most cities will overcome that through comprehensive strategies, master planning, and then ultimately we see a lot of cities trying to communicate the why on decision making. What does that look like for you from a marketing perspective, where you really focus on that storytelling? How do we get Texans to understand that it is a competitive world, it's a competitive market, and when we look at cities and towns and neighborhoods that you live in, there's a role that we can all play in creating that beautiful story, whether we're up and coming working class, or we're an investor that says, oh, I can make a difference, or a business owner saying, no, this is where I want to build my business and where I want to impact families for generations to come.
Yeah, look, the classic American endeavor is first to bring grit and a kind of inner resolve and self-efficacy with yourself and family to socially stratify and also to build strong proprietorship, ownership, and a mission in life. The American endeavor is about making one generation stronger each time you go forward in life. And in Fort Worth, we have a lot of those opportunities because we have investable unit economics. We have a reasonable tax basis, and there's also projected growth, and so there's a lot of opportunity to enterprise. And then there's good jobs, too. And then Fort Worth itself has an epic narrative that is pretty inspirational. We were a fort on the Western Front to help establish trading posts and also to fend off a warring party, mostly of the Comanches, that were a vicious and vile, stripped-down culture of war. And in that, we built a kind of toughness. Fort Worth was a federal fort established to ensure that our settlers had a way of building the future. And then when John Peter Smith, our first mayor, and then every subsequent mayor after our city establishment began to get to work, they focused on faith, family, and good society and good first principles. We've pretty much kept that going. We had some really wild seasons, though, at Fort Worth, because we were a trading center for the cattle ranchers and also a resting place in the city recreation space. So all the folks on the cattle trail, particularly the Chisholm Trail, the famous Chisholm Trail, they would come and gamble and go to the brothels in our downtown Fort Worth, which was called Hell's Half Acre, where we had shootouts. And then there was a Protestant sweep that moved them all out of our city. And then we had a kind of mafia chapter in the 50s that was wiped out by Bobby Kennedy and all of that era. And now we have just kind of this lure, or I should say lore, of history and almost mythology, where you have really good, strong, faith-based and faith-led missions that would contend with healthy tension, in my opinion, with that kind of festering sin and just wild spirit of Texas. And you put it all together now, what you get is kind of a Western chic culture. And that means folks are able to go to work in boots and a hat and still do good work and be celebrated for that historical kind of cultural note. And then also we've got some of the best country music and two-step and three-step dancing in the world. And so with the stockyards and just around town with the rodeo. So you put all that together and we have something really, really unique. Now, the way that I think a city brands itself, you can look at Paramount-backed production, which is, we have a campus in North Fort Worth, which is where Taylor Sheridan and that kind of Alliance Texas area are doing some incredible things. We've got sound stages and post-production that's moving forward with state incentives, but also has a workforce training partnership locally and also through the state. And we have some industry clustering that has great marketing coming out of this area. So you'll see Fort Worth in a lot of named and themed in a lot of Taylor Sheridan's shows, which is, I think, really cool. We have a big marketing agency in town called PMG, the Fort Worth based. They have great ties to TCU, and they give digital voices to so many things coming out of Fort Worth, which is cool. We have so many different ways of telling the Fort Worth story now. You can say, hey, we're a million-person city that still feels like a town. Or you can say things like, tourism isn't fluff. Fort Worth cites over $3.5 billion impact in $250 million in taxes tied to our visitor activity. Come be part of it. And so then all the hospitality, energy, and innovation comes in. We talk often about how our airport is our first impression. DFW's moved to 90 million passengers. Are you visiting yet? Come be part of this. We talk about how our city is still a place to wear boots, go to church, and find a great restaurant. All the while, you can be part of a world-class museum that tells the story of the world's history. You know, that kind of thing in a one-liner is a lot to unpack and exciting for people. We still have, believe it or not, some local TV that connects to digital videos. And so there's a really interesting legacy and digital media ecosystem that's still happening here. There's the Fort Worth Roots podcast that I'm really excited about. They're about to gear up for 2026 and kind of pop off again. They had 100,000 listeners previously and a consistent listenership in North Texas. So we do have some local energy in that. And then, when you're here in January and February, you're going to see the energy of the Fort Worth Rodeo, which I think can rival any rodeo month than any city in Texas. And I know Houston has the claim and San Antonio has the claim to some of the most robust rodeos ever. But when it comes to the heartbeat and the threading of a city's pride and just the fun that we have, I put Fort Worth up against anybody.
Well, I so appreciate the conversation today. We've covered a wide-ranging number of topics, but it all boils down to how we're creating a brighter future across Texas. And Fort Worth is a shining example of a local community really investing in itself and bringing to bear the culture and the city that it wants to be. So I appreciate the deep dive and the explanation and how we all get there.
Hey, these are early days for us. I look forward to talking again. It's great to see you. The listeners may not know that we were, I don't know how many thousands of feet up in the sky at Zion National Park in Utah, camping together. And we've got an awesome group of friends of a good mix of military folks and a lot of guys that have military ethic. And when you put all that kind of grit and fun Texas swagger out in another state, we can put a shock to the system of everyone who we come in contact with. And we certainly did.
We definitely did. We had a lot of fun, and I look forward to repeating that this year in March coming up.
Likewise. Yeah, buddy.
Well, thank you so much, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
You too. Take care, Justin.
You as well. Thank you for joining us at the Building Texas Show. We're excited to share stories from across the state covering the future of work and what Texas is going to look like over the next 50 years. Please like and subscribe on YouTube.